Shabbat shalom. This week's Torah portion is called Vayetze, which means, and he went out. It covers Genesis chapters 28, verse 10 through 32, 3. As our parasha opens this week, we find Jacob departing from his home in Beersheba and heading to Haran, his ancestral homeland. He ends up spending the night in an open area where he sees a vision of a great ladder descending from heaven with angels going up and down the ladder. And above the ladder was the Lord, who spoke to Jacob and again reiterated the promises he had made to both Abraham and to Isaac, that the land where Jacob was that evening was to be given to Jacob and his descendants. In addition, Jacob's descendants were to be as the dust of the earth, and through Jacob's descendants, the whole world would be blessed. We can see the prophetic nature of this blessing from God, because through Jacob's descendants, the Messiah was born. And through the Messiah, all the nations of the world have been blessed. From here on, Jacob begins to develop his relationship with God that many years later will turn him into a strong and mature believer. But at this point, as he departs from the spot where he had this vision, he tries to make a deal with God, saying in verse 20, "If God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, and I return to my father's house in safety, then the Lord will be my God." In chapter 29, Jacob arrives at Haran, the land of his ancestors, and meets Rachel, the daughter of Laban. Laban is the brother of Rebekah, Jacob's mother. Laban brings Jacob to stay in his house. At the end of 1 month, Jacob is very much in love with Rachel, so he tells Laban that he will work 7 years without pay if he is allowed to marry Rachel. But at the end of 7 years, when Jacob is supposed to be allowed to marry Rachel, Laban substitutes Leah, Rachel's sister, at the end of the wedding feast, and Jacob ends up sleeping with her. Discovering the situation, Jacob confronts Laban, who tells him that for another 7 years of work, he can marry Rachel also. But he doesn't have to wait for 7 years. He can get married to Rachel in just 1 week. So in the span of 2 weeks, Jacob finds himself married to two women, although it is truly Rachel that he loves. Well, because the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he allows her to have children while Rachel remains barren. You can get a sense of what is going on in the relationship of Jacob and Leah by the way Leah names her sons. Reuben means see a son, because Leah says in verse 32 that surely Jacob will love her now that she has borne him a son. Simeon, the second born's name, means heard. And Leah says in verse 33 that the Lord has heard that she was unloved, so he gave her another son. Levi is the third son to be born to Leah, and his name means attached or joined. In verse 34, Leah says that Jacob must now become attached to her since she has borne him three sons. You can get a sense of how Leah felt about the way Jacob was treating her. The breakdown in the family relationship continues in chapter 30, with Leah and Rachel competing against each other for Jacob's affection and to bear his children. The competition gets so heated that both women have their maids, Zilpah and Bilhah, sleep with Joseph just so that they can have more sons. Probably the lowest point in this whole situation is chapter 30, verses 14 and 15. When Reuben finds some mandrakes, which were known in the ancient world to help with fertility, and Rachel begs Leah to let her have some, they strike a deal where Leah allows Rachel to have some of the mandrakes while Rachel lets Leah sleep with Jacob. After the birth of Joseph, Jacob asks Laban to let him leave, but Laban is reluctant since he sees that God has blessed and prospered Jacob. And Laban is one of the main beneficiaries of that prosperity. Jacob knows that the Lord has been blessing him. And he also knows that he needs to provide for his family. So he makes a deal with Laban. Jacob will take any of the spotted or speckled goats and sheep, while Laban will keep the solid animals. While this deal seems to benefit Laban, eventually Jacob's spotted and speckled goats and sheep vastly outnumber Laban's flock. Well, the word of the Lord comes to Jacob in chapter 31, and at that point, he is ready to leave. Because of his gaining extensive wealth and animals, he has become much wealthier than Laban, and there is anger in Laban's household about this. Plus, Laban will not let him leave voluntarily. So while Laban is on a 3-day journey away shearing sheep, Jacob takes Leah and Rachel, his children and his flocks, and departs. Laban finds out about this and pursues them, catching up in about a week. God warns Laban in a dream not to harm Jacob. After some back and forth regarding the reasons why Jacob left, Laban and Jacob made a treaty and set up a pillar of rocks that effectively stated that neither one could go past that point. Jacob would not go back toward Haran, and Laban would not go towards Canaan. Our parasha closes with Jacob sending messengers to Esau. So what can we take away from this parasha? Unfortunately, the deception that Jacob used to receive his blessing will haunt him for much of his life. When Jacob and his mother deceived Isaac, he was not as close to God as he would become. The Bible tells us that we reap what we sow. Goatskin coverings help make Isaac think that Jacob was Esau. The darkness of night allowed Laban to get Jacob to think that Leah is Rachel. And later, the blood of a sheep used on a multicolored cloak to make Jacob think that Joseph is dead. We really need to think about the negative consequence that deception can play in our lives and the lives of others. Secondly, this parasha speaks to us very deeply about family relationships. We men need to learn that being closely involved in the development and the development of our relationships as servant leaders in the family is crucial. In Genesis chapter 2, God created man and then the woman. The man is created first and is to be at the head of the woman. Just as man was created first and then woman, men must take the initiative to love and care for our wives. In Ephesians chapter 5:25, Paul mentions the husband first before he mentions the wife and says, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her." And in verse 28, he says, "So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself." And that's really what servant leadership is about. We men should not be heavy-handed in our family. We should be looking for opportunities first to serve, how we can help develop our family, our wives, our kids, make them to be the best that they can be. I always like to put it this way. We need to be like the rain from above and the soil from below, encapsulating our wives in that family and the family so that they can truly demonstrate God's love into this world. Messiah reminded us that also that loving our neighbor like we love ourselves was the second most important commandment. But love starts first in our homes. How can we truly love our neighbor as ourselves if we don't start loving at home, with our spouses, with our children, and with other family members? Let us truly build that love at home in order to spread it beyond our families. Shabbat Shalom.